Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And in this week's long-awaited Screen Verdict podcast...
We've been getting letters about this, and I'm glad we've finally gotten on top of it.
We're going to be reviewing one of our listeners' favourite television series, Homeland.
Yeah, well, the Homeland Season 1 podcast is our top-rating podcast of all time, so... surely this one will set off the rain. There's been a bit of something. Season 2 wasn't as popular as Season 1, though, so... Maybe the Homeland interest has waned a little bit since the show first hit the scene.
Sure, people are interested in the verdict, though, because this is perhaps a make-or-break season for Homeland.
Mm.
Yeah, out of the gates fast with Season 1.
Won the Emmy.
Season 2, bit of a dip. This is sort of the momentum decider, really, for the show.
Yeah, has it fallen off a cliff, or has it really just... stayed steady or improved, I guess, like,
the three options, gone worse, stayed the same, or gone better.
Yes.
We'll be giving one of those three verdicts at the end of the podcast.
Yes, definitely. Now, just one thing before we start talking about plot and things of Homeland. Did the theme, like, song get worse this year for Homeland? I felt like it did, but I haven't gone back and checked season ones.
I think the music was the same, but the clips and stuff and the little background stuff, they added more to it.
Yeah.
It was kind of cluttered. To be honest, I just skipped it every episode.
It did seem
I've never been a fan of the Homeland intro, to be honest.
Yeah, a more... Like, they made it more crowded, but it was already very crowded. Like, I don't know what they were thinking. Hey, let's put more clips... It's stuff like Brody just standing in a maze and things. I don't remember that from the show. That would have been a good episode. Brody's in a maze. And I'm a big fan of mazes. So should we get to the spoiler section right now?
Yeah, we've given the premise and stuff in our first Homeland review. I guess these are people that are up to date with the show. We're going to be talking about everything that happens in season 3 of the show.
Or people who aren't up to date with the show, but... are more interested in hearing us talk than watching Homeland.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. So, if you don't want to be spoiled for Homeland Season 3, stop listening now. We've got a classic spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Woo, 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 woo,
woo! You have been warned. Spoilers from this point in.
It was a very realistic siren. I thought the CIA was about bursting through the windows.
I'm sure Obama's listening to this. I'm sure. It's probably about half our podcast download to NSA agents from America. Well, one of our favourite actors is actually Jennifer Lawrence.
There's a segue coming, I swear.
Now, yes, don't think we'll just use any excuse to get Jennifer Lawrence in a podcast. It's Homeland related, okay? People may have seen this. It did go viral. But there was a bit of a Homeland encounter Jennifer Lawrence had on the red carpet at, I think it's the Golden Globes. It could be the Screen Actors Guild. Did you hear about this?
No.
Okay. Jennifer Lawrence, I'll set it up because the people listening can't see the video. Damian Lewis is being interviewed near where Jennifer Lawrence is being interviewed, and Jennifer Lawrence is a big fan.
Somebody's got a crush on somebody.
No, somebody has watched the two episodes or two seasons of Homeland twice, and I'm freaking out a little bit.
You've never met him before?
That is Brody. I've never met Brody before. I'm like, I can't look.
Okay, you want to meet him now?
No. Be cool. Okay. Be cool. Don't stop looking. Stop it. Stop doing that. Stop. Stop it. Seriously, I'm not good. No, stop it.
It's like, it's great.
She wants
it. It's like a double interview.
She wants the show ever. Oh my god.
Yes. Come here. Let's
she wants the show. Oh
they're hugging.
Fantastic. How are you?
The show's amazing. My ears are so red, aren't they?
You're in front of my head. That's weird.
Oh my god.
How old am I?
Oh, thank you.
How old are you?
Oh, no, I just
hugged a 9-year-old.
Are you upset that he died?
You know they killed
them all. They killed them all. What? They killed
them
all.
They killed them
all. What a show.
And don't tell us you did just a spoiler.
Oh, my gosh.
No, they haven't.
They really haven't.
These two are crazy.
I can't process this right now, and I can't. There's cameras, and I have to.
These two are crazy. They've been doing this all day to everybody.
I can't believe you said that. I said the first and second season. I haven't watched the third season. I have to wait for it to come out on DVDs because I'm not patient. I can't believe you did that. I don't even know what to say. Have you seen past mad? It's this weird other emotion that it's mad as an it.
I'm so sorry. I have made Jennifer Lawrence so mad, but I'm going to show you something.
Mad. I feel like my heart just fell out.
I'm going to show you something that'll make you happy. Have you heard of the Tottlewoods?
Okay.
Well, the Tottlewoods. They made a miniature dress. They made a miniature dress.
That's funny.
Isn't it cute?
It does kind of make me feel better. All right. Yeah.
He's alive.
I'm still never going to forgive you, but that was funny.
I know. In season one and two, he's alive.
Oh, well, that makes it better. God, you're a monster. You are a monster.
Okay, so Access Hollywood... Don't give the spoiler alerts that the Scream Verdict podcast does. Thoughts, Jonathan, on that?
It was very awkward. It was very... Her meeting him and him doing a joke and her being pressed up against the wall, being too embarrassed to say hello. None of that would have come across on the podcast.
Yeah.
The spoiler... Yeah, that's just amateur journalism there, really.
Yeah.
She explicitly said before she gave away the spoiler that she'd seen the first two seasons. Well,
yeah.
I guess she said she'd seen the first two seasons twice. Who knows how many times she's seen the third season? Maybe only once.
There's a few things I take away from this. First thing is, I said a couple of podcasts ago that I think I'd be a bit intimidated going out with Jennifer Lawrence. But I'm not so sure now, because when I met Damian Lewis... I was a lot more cool and calm and collected than she was. So it seems like in settings like if we're out at award shows together and we're bumping into people like Damian Lewis, I might be a calming like presence for her and be able to introduce her to people that she's a bit nervous to meet. So that was a big takeaway. The second was...
I like the fact the thought that Jennifer Lawrence needs you to introduce her to famous people. She's not meeting George Clooney or someone. It's the other way around.
Well, I would have thought it would be the other way around instinctively. But just from watching that, like, she'd never met Damian Lewis before. I had. So... Secondly, and I don't want to criticise Jennifer Lawrence at all, because Access Hollywood was definitely appalling by giving her that spoiler, okay? Not cool at all when she'd specifically said that she'd watched the first two seasons. But do you think you're playing with fire if you don't want Homeland spoilers going to a whole bunch of award shows with the cast and crew of Homeland?
I feel like award shows are a bit spoilery.
Mm.
Like, I've seen... the Emmys and things play clips from, you know, maybe the final episode of the season. I'm like, geez.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that, best off not going to award shows.
Yeah, like what if Damian Lewis had won and he'd said something like, oh, it's so great to win for my last year on the show. Like, she goes, oh, why is it his last year on the show? Like, so I do think she was playing a bit with fire, like, you're telling me Jennifer Lawrence can't get access to season 3? She's got to wait for the DVD to come out.
As if she can't give Showtime a call and be like, hey, I'm Jennifer Lawrence. Could you send me the episodes?
Well, I don't want to again sound like I'm a bit more connected in Hollywood than Jennifer Lawrence is, but I was getting sent links by the studio to Homeland episodes. I don't know how Jennifer Lawrence couldn't wiggle that. And
so just how real and down to earth she is. She waits with all the little people for the regular DVD release date.
Yeah, but anyway, I still love Jennifer Lawrence. And that's a great reaction to a spoiler, because that's how we all feel when we get spoiled about things.
I hate spoilers.
I do not like them at all. And that's why, even though maybe some would argue statute of limitations on Homeland Season 3 spoilers could be up, we're very diligent in giving our spoiler warnings, because we would hate to have someone like Jennifer Lawrence's heart come out of her, or the feeling of that. But we will talk about Brody's death a bit later in the podcast, because that is the big thing from this season of Homeland.
Mm.
If you've just tuned in, you missed a spoiler alert, and we may have just spoiled that for you, but...
Sharon Fulford clicking on a Homeland Season 3 review and starting 11 minutes in.
Yeah, exactly. What else happened this season in Homeland, though?
Well, the end of season two, bomb goes off at Langley. CIA.
Literally, a bomb goes off.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, like, you know, there's a big twist at the end of the season. Oh, the bomb's been dropped.
Like, if I said they dropped a bomb on us at Langley.
Yeah.
A bomb goes off at Langley's.
Literally.
Quite literal.
Yeah, it is literal.
It's the CIA headquarters. They lose, I think, 219 people. It's a huge, huge attack.
Hmm.
And everybody thinks it's Brody, except for Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie helps him escape, basically, at the end of the season.
Hmm.
And we open up this season with Carrie being questioned. Hmm. Where were you? Where is Brody? How do you explain this 14 hours that you are supposedly unconscious in a bathroom? Well, I guess that's how she explains it. She's unconscious in a bathroom.
And the guy running these inquiries is a bit of a stickler. Like, he's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit critical.
What's his name? Senator Lockhart, I think. Yeah, he doesn't believe her.
Mm.
And he's yelling something. He kind of seems like the bad guy. But she is lying.
Yeah, he is right.
He's actually in the right.
Yeah.
If a CIA agent was lying to you about one of the worst terrorist attacks ever in your country, you probably would be a bit angry and want to try and get the truth out of them.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that Brody's probably innocent.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, I think you've got to assume Brody. You've got to get Brody in for questioning, right?
Mm.
Like, there's enough of a...
Even if he didn't do it, just because of his connection to the group, there's a possibility that he could still be useful even if he didn't do it.
Yeah. Carrie's on trial, and at one point she sort of loses a bit in the trial and goes, maybe Brody, because she's sort of at the beginning towing the line a bit, like not giving many answers, sort of being vague. And at one point she goes, maybe he is innocent.
Yeah, but then the CIA and the lawyer makes her retract that.
Yeah.
She's off her meds. I don't know. She seems to think that when she takes her lithium that it sort of dulls her and she's not as sharp. She doesn't spot things. But she does go off the wagon a bit.
Yeah.
So I guess the stress of the bombing and Brody and being questioned, she starts to become a bit of a liability.
Yeah, a loose cannon. And Saul goes to Lockhart calls Saul in for a better call Saul and see what's going on. And Saul's there and Saul sort of throws Carrie under the bus a bit.
Yeah.
And that's when she really loses. Like, she walks in on, like, the newspaper or the blog paper or whatever they're doing these days in media and goes, I've got the story, I'm going to blow the lid off this. Brody is innocent. It's a setup. And then Saul and Co go, let's just throw her in the loony bin. Like...
Yeah, she gets carted off to the mental institution, which was partly her own fault.
Mm.
Because even if she's in the right in terms of knowing what happened, you can't just be going to the newspaper and things. And at her hearing or whatever, where all she has to do is just pretend that she's sane for like 5 minutes, something annoys her and she just goes, "Rah, this is all BS," and tries to run and kick and scream and get out of the place. And you go, well... She actually is insane. She does need to be put in an institution.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to lie. I found this pretty boring, carrying the mental institution. I don't know. I don't like seeing her scream and shout and rant and rave. I want to see some snooping. I want to see some plans. I want to see some ambiguity. Like, I just... That's why I like Homeland. I don't like Homeland for medical... personal drama.
I liked it because it showed Saul throwing her under the bus. I thought that was so ruthless. I've not really been the biggest fan of Saul in the first two seasons. I think he's kind of like a bit of a Herschel from Walking Dead. He's just your lame old guy that always tries to do everything by the book and gives you sort of moral lessons and sort of a bit of a bland good guy.
He's sort of good to help you out, but like, if it's something you're worried that he won't approve of, everyone can just do it behind his back and he realises.
Yeah, because usually in the Saul-Carrie debates, I actually usually agreed with Carrie. This season, I think I agreed a bit more with Saul. Saul basically is the lead now.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Brody in a bit. Basically, Brody has a lot less screen time, and I'd argue that Saul is the male lead of the show.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with the Emmys.
We'll talk about him more in a bit, but basically, I think Saul got off to a good start here. I was like, okay, Saul's stepping up to the plate. He's doing what needs to be done.
Mm.
So, yeah, something else that they do in the first few episodes is they're actually able to get six of the high-up people that were involved in the Langley bombing.
Mm.
So that was a bit of a win for the CIA, except Lockhart thinks it's all just a charade to take, you know, pressure off the CIA, and I guess you get a bit of Quinn there. Quinn gets in on the season.
Mm.
He kills a bunch of people. It was a pretty badass scene. But then one more person comes into the room, or you just see like a light or a sound, and he shoots. And it's the kid. But they did all this big effort in order to avoid killing the kid because the kid was in the car. And then he accidentally shoots the kid once he gets into the house.
Yeah.
So that makes Quinn a bit mopey for the rest of the season. Makes him question whether what they do at the CIA is worth it.
He's lucky Jesse Pinkman wasn't around. He would have gone ballistic. I feel like Quinn, just quickly on Quinn, I feel like Quinn just became this sort of like, you know, he was sort of like this no-nonsense guy they brought in season two to sort of be a bit of a conflict for Carrie sort of thing. Like, and then he gets really soft when he decides not to assassinate Brody at the end of last season. And now he's just like de facto voice of Carrie. Like, just he's always sort of like, you know, he's sort of changed a lot.
Mm. I did like him helping out Carrie. Because Carrie, even though she didn't always appreciate it, Carrie doesn't really have anyone. She's always battling Saul.
Yeah.
Brody's gone.
Mm.
And then you got Quinn there to do kind of cool things where he blocks the guy in his four-wheel drive when he's going to go check for whether Carrie's in the yoga studio.
Mm-hmm.
And Quinn's like, hey, man, do you know where 1412 Evergreen Terrace is? And he's like, get out of my way, man!
Oh, that was good. So, yeah, so we've got Saul sort of running the show CIA a bit in a bit of pressure because, obviously, that explosion, there's some sort of political fallout and do we need to change up CIA, obviously. A bit embarrassing to get a bomb into the CIA.
Yeah.
So he's dealing with that, and I'm dealing with it fairly well, considering dealing with Carrie quite well. She's mental in the institution. And then what's Brody been up to? We don't see him for, like, four or five episodes.
Yeah, I think it's, like, episode four is the first time we get to see Brody.
Mm.
And he's brought into basically the slums of Caracas, and he's been shot in the stomach, and he gets treated in this pretty dingy place.
A very tall building, though.
Yeah, it's a big tower, I think, that some leader was, oh, this is going to be our big crowning achievement, make this big thing, and then he was corrupt and they ran out of money halfway through. So now it's just people squatting in this half-finished skyscraper almost.
Mm.
His episode is basically about him trying to get out. He enlists the help of that girl.
Mm.
He goes to the mosque for asylum. I thought that was quite good, that bit. The guy, because the guy ends up finding out who he is and he says, you know, you're not a Muslim, you're a terrorist. Which is good because I think sometimes in Homeland, you think, oh, everyone in Iran is bad, all these Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah.
You might feel it's like a little bit one-sided, but it was good to have this guy that was like, you know, he believed in his Islamic faith, but he didn't support the terrorism.
Yeah.
So he gets turned in, and unfortunately those people all get shot, though, because of the bad guys that are, who are basically imprisoning Brody.
Hmm.
And I guess it's a pretty dark place for him. He just ends up accepting the heroin. Well, they've been offering and was like, oh, I can't deal with this pain anymore. I'm just going to numb my senses and sit in my little cage doing heroin.
And this is a bit, like, I didn't get a good read on the people who had captured him. Like, because they're holding him prisoner, but they're also keeping him safe. So I don't really know what their end game is.
The reward, $10 million.
Why didn't they just call up straight away and get that reward? Why are they keeping him?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Mm.
Maybe they had to somehow get the word out there quietly. They have to take the right channels, because if people find out you've got Brody, then they're going to come try and take him, because they'll want the $10 million.
Mm.
We're not really sure how long Brody spends in that place.
No.
Seems like maybe a couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely like three episodes. So He's at Caracas. Pretty boring, I'm going to be honest. Again, I'm pretty bored with this whole Caracas thing.
I liked it. I thought...
Really?
I thought...
I'm sensing we're going to have different verdicts.
I thought the Doctor was amazing. He was such a good actor. He was so weird. He had this kind of effeminate quality, but he was very intelligent, but he'd come from this really dirty, slimy place, and he had that weird little boy that just followed him around, and everything he said was like a little parable, and he would talk about Brody being a cockroach, and he was unkillable, but everywhere he went, he brought disaster. I thought he was a fantastically well-spoken, a great actor.
Okay. Now, while Brody is getting up to nothing much, well, he's getting up to heroin, his kid is running amok. Dana has not taken the news of her dad being the America's Most Wanted terrorist very well.
Classic teenage girl overreaction, finding out your dad murdered 219 people.
Also, your dad's the worst person in the world.
The press hounding you every single day. What's it like for your dad to be the most evil person in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be pretty terrible. And she attempts suicide, which is not good. And we don't actually get to see that. We see her, I think, in sort of a...
rehab or recovery or place where they deal with people who have tried to commit suicide.
Yeah. And while in there, she's met a boy.
Yeah.
Who's in there for all the murders he committed in Dexter.
Yeah.
Probably not the best person you should be starting a relationship with after your depression. But she leaves, and I guess there's a bit of trouble adjusting to normal life. She doesn't hate her mum, but maybe she's not really able to relate to her mum as much. She wants to change her name, but she realizes even if she legally changes her name, people probably still recognize her. She'll always be Brody's daughter. Like, that's never going to go away.
Yeah.
So she runs away with this guy, and I thought, you know, them running away, it was sort of okay for, like, part of an episode.
Really?
And then you have them, the mystery of, like, that kid, like, you know, what he's actually... done, like, what was the story with his brother and stuff. And I thought that was going to develop into something, but they kind of just cut their losses. It just sort of was revealed that...
he was a murderer.
Well, I don't think he murdered him.
He killed someone.
Well, he got out... I think he got out the gun and they were playing with it and the gun went off.
Okay.
But he said that his brother committed suicide.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want any of the blame.
Yeah.
And then that was it. We just never returned to that character.
Yeah.
So that was a bit unsatisfying. Felt like time wasted.
Yeah. Dana has had not a very good run with the guys.
No.
Has she?
Almost. She's like a Deborah Morgan in training.
Yes.
Everyone she dates ends up being like a murderer or manslaughterer.
Yeah.
She's only, like, 16 or something.
She's got two manslaughterers. Oh, man. And I thought they weren't really, really risque, but the sex scenes with her were a bit more than I would have asked for from Homeland.
Yeah, you had her taking nude selfies and things.
Yeah. Well, in the laundry room scene and stuff. I thought, were people wanting this? Homeland fans wanting...
I would think after season one, Chris would feel very annoyed at the disparity of screen time between himself and Dana by season three.
Yes.
She's getting story arcs, she's getting sex scenes.
Yes.
All he's done is just grown a foot since season two.
Do you reckon there was a point where the writers realised, why did we need to give them two children? we've got Bear, like, the stuff with her is the worst stuff in the show, and we've got nothing for him.
He just gets to hug Dana two or three times when she looks sad.
I will say, a bit later on, Brody comes and says goodbye to Dana or says sort of he's sorry or whatever. That's a pretty good scene.
I think she's quite a good actress. I didn't really like her at first, but I think she's gotten better as the seasons have gone on.
Yeah. Oh, here's something else that's interesting. Carrie is pregnant with Brody's baby. This is, I'm sure, what every Homeland fan was begging for.
I didn't mind this, because in some ways it sort of heightens the tension and stakes or whatever, being able to find Brody and the relationship between Carrie and Brody. Something in the earlier seasons, at first you thought, how can she fall in love with him when she thinks he's a terrorist? And then how can she be in love with him when she knows he's a terrorist? At least when the bomb goes off and she thinks he's innocent, you can be like, well, you've grown attached to this person, you've known him so long, at least you can care about them being proven innocent because, you know, you're a CIA agent that wants to defend your country and you want to find the real truth. So that makes sense that she's invested in some point, to some degree. I'm glad this season wasn't really about their love story as much because Brody was away. It was more about the spy, the intel, the action, that sort of stuff, which I like. I feel like it is sometimes, though, it's a bit of a cop-out in terms of TV shows. Oh, the female character, just make her pregnant.
Yeah. It seemed a bit soap opera-ish and a bit sort of... Yeah, a bit. I didn't really like the direction. With your question about how she can be in love with him when he's a terrorist, that is a bit confusing. I'm not trying to completely defend that. But here's my thoughts on it. To try and get close to him in season one, she sleeps with him.
Yeah.
I feel like that muddies feelings. You know, sex, I think, can affect people's feelings. And then all of a sudden, the person you're trying to get really close to... It's almost like...
Stockholm Syndrome.
I know that's not really what I'm talking about here, but, like, I do feel like your head could get messed up by sort of constantly sleeping with someone. And it's interesting, they both did have things they could connect on. And all of a sudden, the person... Her voyeurism of him as well, and just she got to know him so intimately, sexually, emotionally, things that she developed these feelings for him. I feel like that was sort of real, but I never understood why she could be in love with someone like that. I get why she had feelings for him, but like this sort of like, it almost seemed like at one point, like he was the love of her life.
I don't know, I guess she was just able to separate those things from the terrorism. I guess she thought the terrorism was a result of him being tortured for 8 years. And yeah. I mean, I would break if I was tortured for 8 years. I'd probably become a terrorist. Well, actually, you mean I would probably give up information. I'd be like, here are the nuclear codes or whatever. But I think once you get back to American soil, you have a bit more of a choice.
Yeah.
As to whether to continue your terrorism.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
So anyway, those two will eventually meet up and stuff will happen, the stakes of which heighten by the fact that Carrie is pregnant.
Yeah.
So, I guess about...
And when she's pregnant, all the doctors, you gotta take it easy. No high-stress situations.
No worries. I only work for the CIA on the hunt for the most wanted man in the world.
Because I want to prove his innocence.
Because he's the father!
Did you think it was almost laughable when people told her, like, she could be in high-stress situations, just like... But we as a viewer know she obviously is going to ignore that advice. It's just so, like, redundant, that sort of, like...
Yeah.
Like, there was never any sort of question of, oh, maybe she'll take a couple of episodes not doing much. Maybe she'll sit the rest of this season out. So anyway, some lawyers approach Carrie, and they say, hey, look, you're causing a bit of embarrassment for the administration. We don't mind that. We think your rights are being violated, Carrie. We'll defend you. We will help you out here. And she's like, get out of my face, because you probably represent terrorists. And then they're like, well, think about it. And then some more stuff happens, she gets more stressed, they throw her under the bus even more, and then she calls and goes, right, I'll do it, but I've got to meet with the top guy. I've got to meet with the head guy that's paying for my legal representation, because I want to at least have an agreement with him. And they're like, I'm not sure we can swing that. This guy is pretty slippery. He's pretty... He's a bit... doesn't like meeting with people. But we'll see what we can do. And they're like, Kongo, yeah, we'll sort it out. Then we have sort of the big pivot of the season, I guess.
She goes to Saul's house. And you think she's going to be really mad at Saul.
A Saul house call.
But instead of arguing with each other, Saul's like, you did it.
You are so incredible. You're one of a kind.
They're setting up the meeting.
Yeah. So they have, this whole first four episodes was an elaborate long con by Saul and Carrie to make the terrorists believe that the CIA hated Carrie, or Saul hated Carrie, and Carrie hated Saul, and now she can meet with this terrorist guy.
I thought this was a pretty good twist. It was a pretty good plan. Pretty good way to lure in, I guess, just the bad guy.
Yeah.
to make them think that Carrie is vulnerable and will give them information about the CIA in order to get to that person that would normally never poke their head out. My only question was, there was never really any clues looking back on it as to a point at which you thought Carrie was in on it.
Yeah.
Was she in on it the whole time? Well, I don't know. She seemed very upset. You know, she watches Saul on the TV throwing her under the bus at the hearing, and her reaction looked very upset. It didn't seem like she was in on it at that point.
Yeah, and that's private. Like, that's not, she's not putting on a show for
anything. It's not in front of anyone else at the CIA or the terrorists. She's just in her own home, so she doesn't need to act as if she's surprised or upset.
Is it like Batman, though, in The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, where he puts on the voice even if people who know his identity are the only people with him because he's in character and he's trying to get... She's the Daniel Day-Lewis of CIA agents. She has to be in character 24/7.
No.
You cannot buy that. It could still be hard to see someone you care about say something bad about you in the public, even if you know it's a lie, though.
Maybe.
I think that's what the writers of Homeland would say. I think that's what they would say. I still think you're right, though. I think this wasn't very well set up. But I think they do... She is in on it then. There's no way this plan could have formulated later.
Like, maybe once she was in the hospital, Saul explained why he did it, but I don't know. I think you're supposed to believe that she was in on it from beforehand.
I think so. Because I think it's even less believable that at that point, when she's at that low, that Saul would be able to get her trust back so quickly.
So anyway, the guy they're trying to get is called Javadi.
Yeah.
And he's pretty high up in the...
Iranian? Is it Iran?
Yeah, Iranian...
They didn't make up a country.
Republican Guard or something.
Yeah. You know some shows that make up a country when there's like... No, there's Iran.
No, it's just like Iran.
Iran's bad guys. All bad guys. Yeah.
And he has a history with Saul. They worked together sort of 40 years ago.
They used to be friends. Like, yeah.
But then when the revolution happened, that guy ended up giving up a bunch of the CIA agents. They were friends of Saul's. They all got murdered. So Saul helped Javadi's, I think, wife and kid possibly escape to America. So anyway, he's pretty high up in the intelligence and he wants Carrie. And with the help of the new girl at the CIA, it's like her first week or something, the accountant girl from Iran, they find out that he's been embezzling money from the Republican Guard and they're able to trap him when he comes to get Carrie. They're able to go, look, haha, we got you.
Yeah.
If we tell them about that, they're going to publicly hang you. So the plan was to catch him, but not just be like, hey, look, we caught this dude that was really high up in, you know, someone that ordered the Langley bombing, but to actually send him back turned, working for the Americans.
Mm.
I like this plan. It's high risk, high reward.
Yeah, good TV. It's a TV plan. It's a made-for-TV plan.
And it's good because it's Saul's plan, so he's getting revenge on this guy. And Lockhart, the senator that you don't like, who's now going to become the director of the CIA, even though he seems horribly unqualified, he's just a political appointee, hates the plan.
Yeah, oh yeah, and we were defending Lockhart a bit earlier for being portrayed as a bit of a villain, but really not doing anything wrong. Later on the season, he does do stuff wrong.
Oh, the battles between him and Saul are so good. When Saul just locks him in the conference room.
That was pretty good. That was one of my favourite scenes of the season. And Yeah, I just love his reaction to things, like when they're sort of filling him in on the plans. And they're like, oh, just letting you know, our plan is to do this, and we've sent Giovanni back. And you go, well, you had Giovanni in the country? And they're like, yeah, yeah, no, we met with him. Like, sort of something out, it's all good. Like, he's sort of like having a heart attack. Like,
I like the stuff with Giovanni. I thought he was a good actor too, and you got all that sort of spy twists and turns, and you got that ruthless scene where he's able to. He knows he's been caught, so he just goes to his ex-wife's house and just murders her.
Mm.
That was pretty ruthless.
Yeah. Then Quinn has to take the fall for the murder. But that's not
that's only a plan. Plan.
The plan gets another level, which is the level where I think Lockhart really starts to lose it. Like, this is really, like...
Well, if they send him back, you know, they've got an American asset, I think they said, you know, one of the most 20 most important people in their intelligence chain.
Yeah.
But if they can get rid of General Akbari...
Yeah.
Okay, which no one's able to get close to. That's a very ambitious...
He's like the top dog. He's the big kahuna.
But if they get rid of him and Giovanni gets put there in his place...
They have control over
they said he's
yeah.
one of the three most important people in the whole country.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the American government's pretty much running Iran. They're pretty much all the policies are going to be U.S. policies.
And their plan to get close to this General Akbari is to send them Brody.
Yeah.
Get Brody to cross over there, say he's looking for asylum, he's the Langley bomber, and when they use him for propaganda purposes, say, wow, you got Brody the Marine,
yeah,
to send no more to America.
Suck on this America, we got Brody.
When Akbari meets with Brody, Brody's able to take him out, and then they can put Giovanni in his place.
Yeah.
I love this plan. This is a great plan.
Mm.
The problem is, Brody is in Caracas with a needle in his arm.
Yeah.
So Saul goes, and he's pretty horrified.
How does Saul find out? Like, was he the guy who got the Caracas guys to...
I think so. I think maybe Saul knew those people.
Mm.
And that's why they were just holding Brody until he was ready to go ahead with the plan.
Yeah, Saul, I gave them a bit of money to just get him, look after him. I like Carrie. He sort of means something to her. Maybe surprise her for Christmas.
So he gets... Brody brings him back to America, but Brody's in pretty terrible shape, physically and mentally, and he's going through a withdrawal as well, which is pretty brutal.
Yeah, like, Saul didn't send the memo, don't get him hooked on heroin. Like, we want him in good nick.
They give him some sort of weird drug that sort of speeds up the withdrawal process but gives you hallucinations. I thought that was a really good scene where he just starts freaking out, starts singing that Marine anthem or something to Tom.
Yeah.
And then he just freaks out and smashes the chair and starts jabbing in his arm. That was pretty...
Yeah.
That was pretty realistic. I thought he was like, blah, blah, he's stabbing his arm.
Yeah.
Flashes back to him with Abu Nazir. I like that. That whole sequence was, I thought, was well done.
Yeah.
Okay. One of my favorite films, Rocky IV, because it's just 80% sports training montages.
Yeah.
We get one of the best montages.
Yeah, we get a sports training montage. So they pretty much, they need to just speed, they want one episode getting Brody from zero to hero.
Yeah.
And there's only one way to do that. A montage.
Man, we see him running, we see him shooting. How they test his memory, his ability to recall things, I guess, because he's going to need those skills for his cover story, is he gets tested on the information written in a porno mag. Why weren't we doing that at school? Why when we did, like, comprehension or whatever, we had to recite bits from Charlotte's Web? Why weren't we reading Hustler like Brody?
Yeah. It's very weird.
So Carrie convinces him to do it, and he aces the montage, I guess. And at the end of, I think it's maybe episode 9, it looks like Brody's ready to go. He's on board, trying to redeem himself, because that's what Brody needs. He needs redemption.
Yeah. And I guess meanwhile, while this sort of plan's getting carried out, we've got Saul and all this workplace drama with Lockhart. We've got a real power struggle, because it's sort of Lockhart's meant to be sworn in to Saul's job a week or two later, but Saul still technically got the role. So there's a lot of both of them talking to the White House about who should be making the decisions.
Lockhart's like, I'm going to be the director in 9 days, and I don't want to have to be making up for your mess.
Yeah.
And Saul's like, well, you know, deal with that in 9 days, because until then, I'm still the director of the CIA.
Yeah.
And I guess how that is somewhat resolved is Saul and his wife is sort of separated. She met this other guy. She comes back. Saul and her might be able to work things out. Turns out that guy was actually a Mossad agent.
Yeah.
The Israeli equivalent of the CIA.
Yeah.
I think Saul realizes that someone knew something they probably shouldn't have been able to know. So he gets his own place swept for bugs.
Hmm.
They bring in Virgil and Max.
Oh, Virgil and Max, yeah.
It's a sweet play. I like them. They're good.
Yeah, they're fun.
How good is it when Quinn's really annoyed that Max is late to something? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, the taxi was late. He's like, you caught a taxi to a CIA safe house?
Yeah.
It was a joke, man. So they find out there's a bug, and they find out that not only is this guy that's been seeing his wife is a spy, but also he's been giving information to Lockhart. So he uses this basically to black Lockhart to give him a couple more weeks in order to carry out this crazy plan of Saul's.
Yeah. I thought this sort of all led to a pretty compelling episode where Brody has to get across the border.
Yeah. They're on the Iran-Iraq border. They're trying to cross, but then some Iraqi police show up. Then there's some sort of convoy. Then the stupid guy hits a damn landmine. Got to pull him out.
Mm.
Then the chief of staff or whatever's like, all right, just use the drones to kill them, and then we can deny the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is on board, and then Saul's like, I will not order an attack on my own men. And you're like, yeah, go Saul.
Yeah.
Man, I used to hate Saul. I love Saul so much this season.
Yeah, he was very good this season. He was the standout for mine.
And they go, no, we're not going to be able to do it in time. Abandon the whole thing. But Brody's like, no, I can make it. I can make it.
Mm.
And
he does.
Yeah. Which is good. That's what I was rooting for. I was like, yeah, go Brody, make it.
Well, if he didn't, then the plan would be no, we would have had just an episode of, I guess, wrap-up. Like,
so once he gets across, he gets sort of processed and things, and you've got Javadi there to help. So, you know, not give him too easy time, so it's suspicious, but, you know, help him be brought in. And then he has his chance to kill Akbari.
Hmm.
As you think he's going to get close enough to do it. This was pretty tense because, oh, man, they got moved place, or the bomb, I was going to go off, blah, blah, blah. Is he going to stab him with the cyanide? And then, not meeting him, meeting the wife of Abu Nazir, who actually knows Brody.
Hmm.
So he becomes this sort of hero to them, this propaganda tool. And I guess he just has to go along with it because he doesn't have the chance to kill Akbari anymore. So there's Brody just on all these TV shows and stuff denouncing America. And Saul's like, this did not go to plan. I'm Lockhart and the president are going to be furious with me.
Yeah. yeah, it's great seeing Brody on those talk shows. Yeah, and then I told him, like,
screw you, America.
Yeah. That American's awful. Like,
you know what I hate? Hot dogs.
Yeah. like the Letterman equivalent over there is like, and now to read out our top 10 list tonight of worst things about America. Nicholas Brody. and I think even they trick us, the viewers, a little bit. Because you see Brody throw the cyanide out the car window, which was like a symbolic sort of, he's giving up on the plan.
Yeah, is it because he doesn't want to kill Akbari anymore, or is it because, you know, he thought the chance was gone and he didn't want to be caught with the cyanide?
I think the way they did the music and the cutting, it definitely seemed like the former was what they were trying to make us think.
So that's what the CIA thinks. They're trying to just kill Brody, cut their losses.
Hmm.
But obviously Carrie, she's over there. She doesn't want that to happen. The CIA goes after him.
And she saves him.
She's like, oh, they're coming for you. Why would they use the same Mossad agents that they used before? That was just silly. Yeah. Like, hey, the ones that we hired to help Brody kill Akbari, can you now actually kill Brody? Well, then Carrie's able to recognize them in the damn market, and that's how Brody gets away.
Hmm.
And he says, oh, I need to speak to Akbari. I need to tell him something about Javadi. You know, oh, man, they're giving up the whole plan. The whole thing's gone to pot.
Hmm.
And he goes to Akbari's office, and he speaks to him, and he finds out that Akbari knew Abu Nazir, and they'd actually spoken about Brody.
Hmm.
And Brody realized, this is the guy that was involved in my capture and torture and turning me in. My whole crappy life that I've lived for the last 10 years has been as a result of this guy.
Hmm.
And he says, so this is where it all started. Whack!
Yeah.
Just kills the guy. And he's like, they've got like 100 guards in this building, just like all outside. And he just murders one of the highest profile people in the country. And you just go, whoa. He rings up Carrie and he's like, Carrie, just kill this guy. Get me out.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good end to the episode.
That was a good end to the episode. And you sort of could tell, like, for the whole 20 minutes leading up to it, that, like, they wanted you to think Brody had turned on the US government.
Mm.
And the whole scene where he's, like, talking to the guy, it's like he's saying all the right things. But you sort of know he's probably going to kill him.
That's what you're hoping, at least.
Yeah. And very, like, you don't want a one-on-one meeting with Brody if you're a politician. Like, pretty much exactly what happened with the vice president last year.
Yeah.
He's a good Brody. He's good. He's been able to take out the vice president of the United States and one of the top three political leaders in Iran in the space of, like, months. That's pretty incredible. And still, I don't think anyone ever knew that he killed the vice president. Did anyone ever figure that out?
No.
That should come out in next season and see how Carrie deals with that. That'd be interesting.
So, basically, it's then a mission for Carrie to try and get Brody out. So, they've completed the plan, but they now need to do the extraction. But the CIA doesn't really care about getting him out.
No.
Javadi wants to capture him.
Yeah.
Because
that'll look good.
He got put in charge of that, and if he doesn't do it, you know, he might not get given Akbari's position.
Yeah.
So Saul says, you know, he didn't believe it at first, but he's like, wow, I actually killed Akbari. Okay, we're going to get him out. And they go to the safe house. They expect the people to come. And then the people that come are Javadi's men.
Yeah.
Someone has sold Carrie and Brody out.
Yeah.
I think that was the final straw for Saul and the CIA. Yeah. If he was thinking that he might stay on, he was not happy with that.
Yeah.
Carrie was not happy with that.
No.
Brody, he was kind of at peace with it.
Yeah. He was looking for redemption, not, like, you know, retirement.
Yeah, the fact that he just found out that he had a baby.
Yeah.
Because at that point, he could just be like, look, it's over. I've somewhat redeemed myself. I just want some peace. You know, if I die, whatever, I'm dead. Mm. But he did just find out he had a baby.
Mm.
So they're going to kill Brody.
Mm.
And Carrie's scrambling to do something. She asks for Saul's help, but he's like, look, this is from the president. There's really nothing I can do.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, there's no way Brody gets out of this. Like, it's going to have to be some cheesy, unbelievable TV if Brody gets out of this. I don't really want Brody to die, but you've set it up to the point where it would be unbelievable if he didn't die.
Mm.
So, you get this scene where, I mean, Carrie speaks to him, blah, blah. That was kind of, I thought that was good. It wasn't just like a big, oh, I love you, blah, blah, blah. It was just kind of sad.
Yeah.
They both didn't know really what to say, and all they wanted to do was really just be with each other for a few seconds longer.
Mm.
And you have just all these people pouring into... Actually, this is the thing that I think Homeland's a bit one-sided about. It's just like everyone... Does everyone in Iran just love a public hanging? Like, surely they should have had someone, like, trying to oppose this hanging or something.
I think if you don't like, you just stay at home, though. Like, it looked like there were a lot of people out there cheering, right? But how many Iranians were just sitting at home watching, you know,
Family
Guy. Mad Men. Like...
Yeah, I guess this is like Akbari's family or something gets brought out to like put the rope around Brody's neck, and there's this
nice touch
giant crane, and they just lift him up by his neck, and he doesn't get to drop from anything and have his neck break and it'd be a quick death. They just lift him up from the crane, and he just sort of dangles there while everyone cheers, and Carrie just has to watch him strangle there, and you think he's gonna die, nothing's gonna happen here. And I don't know, she looks at him, I don't know if they get to make eye contact. Either way, it was pretty ruthless, and he just hangs there till Brody's dead.
Yeah,
he killed him off.
Brody's dead. He was the best thing about the first two seasons of Homeland, no question.
Agreed.
It is going to be a loss not having Brody on the show.
I think the show survived without him in the episodes that he wasn't there this season, but his character was always still in play, and it built to something where he had a major part in it at the end of the season. So, I don't know what they're going to do without that. I mean, I think Saul stepped up. I think Saul was a great character in the lead role, but I don't know what they're going to do from here.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I actually think the show did struggle without him this season. Like, the episodes he was in, I thought, were pretty dry and boring. And I thought the season picked up when he came back. So, I don't know about Homeland Season 4. That being said, I wasn't really as devastated I was when Richard Harrow died in Boardwalk Empire. A much smaller character. In a much larger ensemble.
Yeah, it's interesting when it comes to character deaths on TV. You can not want a character to die, but sort of like it in sort of the sense of the show. Like it made sense within the show.
Mm.
And then you can not want a character to die and then be angry when the show kills him. Like, no, not only did I not want him to die,
but either way it was done.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't want Brody to die. I don't really want him to die for the sake of the quality of the show. But I think how they did it in the show worked.
Yes, I'd agree with that. And to be honest, probably, like, they'd run out of stuff to do with Brody. I'd argue they may have run out of stuff to do with Carrie as well. But, like,
in some ways, this could have been the end of the Homeland.
Yeah.
Because basically the epilogue is Saul's plan has worked. There are things starting to happen between Iran and America, which is really good. He's kind of out of the game, not working for the CIA. Things look pretty good with his wife. CIA is going on without him. Carrie, she's pregnant. She doesn't know whether she wants the baby or not. She misses Brody. Quinn says, hey man, don't mess it up. It looks like she's got the support of her family. They have the thing with the stars on the wall at the end of the year. And Brody doesn't get a star on the wall, but final scene of the show is Carrie just marking one in for Brody on her own.
That'll get cleaned off, right, pretty soon.
Someone would notice it, probably.
At some point, and you get the cleaner straight on that.
I liked it, though. I thought it was a nice little visual for the end of the season.
Yeah, and a last little bit of a Lockhart's a douche moment, too. When she goes, oh, does she like to request that maybe Brody get a star on the wall? Because, like, he sort of gave his life to, you know, redeem himself and to improve world peace. He's like, can't really swing that.
I sort of agreed with him. She said, look, he was taught for 8 years. How can we judge him? And he said, look, I understand that. I'm not judging him. I'm just not going to memorialise him. That's where I'm going to draw the line.
Yeah, he was a bit scared. Like, I guess Brody was a complicated character, and maybe the star is too simple. Like, too... Not a nuanced enough acknowledgement.
a star with a little star. An asterisk.
Yeah, just an asterisk. Was involved in some terrorism. Like... Maybe what Brody got rather than the star was just maybe made up for the damage he'd done.
I think...
Yeah.
I think the redemption is more important than the star on the wall.
Yeah.
So there ends season 3 of Homeland.
Yes. Let's give it a verdict.
Homeland season 3, I didn't have great expectations for this. I thought season 2 was a bit of a step down. You had hinted at me that you weren't enjoying season 3 that much, so I wasn't really looking forward to
it. I said it was a real slog, didn't I? I was like, oh, man.
But I was kind of surprised by the first few episodes. I thought it moved quite well. I was glad that Saul was taking on a bigger and better role in the show. You got some pretty good twists. They had some family stuff, which is never my favourite in Homeland, but I think there was probably less of it this season, and I didn't hate the stuff with Dana. Once you got to the stuff with Javadi, I thought that was really good. Brody's stuff was really good. I think it built to a really good plan and a really sort of tense and exciting last couple of episodes, and yeah, a pretty powerful ending. I would actually say this is my favourite season of Homeland. I'm going to give season 3 an 8.5 out of 10.
Whoa. Okay, I think Homeland season 3, a slow start. Don't care about Dana and her boyfriend. Don't care about Carrie in the loony bin. The Saw stuff a little interesting, but not amazing. Brody, don't really care about him in Caracas. Then we have the twist. I didn't really buy it with what we'd seen beforehand, but at least made the show a bit more interesting. It's got my attention again, but not hugely. Then they bring Brody into the fold, and I think it picks up, and I get excited. I like the stuff where the politics, the backroom doors, the discussions between Saul and Lockhart, that's sort of pretty interesting. Brody, sort of his recovery and quest for redemption, pretty compelling. Brody dying at the end, a good sort of, you know, powerful ending to the season. There are other stupid stuff in there, like Carrie being pregnant with Brody's son, or daughter, I guess. And I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
That was way better than season 2, man. You're nuts.
What is season 2? 7 or something?
I don't know. Definitely not lower than 6, probably yeah, 6.5, 7.
Yeah. So I think that's a good podcast. I will say it's a bit of a long one, so we'll save housekeeping for next episode.
Next couple of episodes, maybe The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Oscars preview.
Yeah, I'll get on to Tom about that, actually.
See how the Screen Verdict Awards might have swung the momentum. We'll be doing our preview predictions.
Well, Gravity's picking up some steam.
Ooh, we enjoyed Gravity.
Mm. Yeah, there you go.
So some fun podcasts coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to that, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.